I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. We're talking today about buying and selling firearms in the United States. For months, the political battle in Washington has been centered on background checks and registries. Some gun owners worry that if their names and their guns are on file somewhere, that's information that a government could use against them. Jay Watchtell says the paperwork is essential. He's also a former ATF investigator. He worked with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms in the 1980s and 90s. In Jay's very first case, he worked with a gun store owner to target a corrupt dealer. He made an arrangement with the man so when the dealer came in to buy guns, the distributor notified Jay and his unit. Jay then mobilized dozens of agents in surveillance vans and even a helicopter to begin the task of tailing the dealer to see what he'd do.
We were trying to be, you know, cagey about it. We wanted to see where the guns would end up. And over a period of 4 or 5 hours, you know, we followed one car around and we saw what might have been transactions, maybe or maybe not. It was very difficult to get in very close. And we eventually had to let the other agents from the other groups go. They had their own business. We had to let the aircraft go. And it was about 14 hours later, and it had been dark. It was probably pretty close to midnight. We wound up in a small suburb, pretty high crime area, and we saw this vehicle that we had been following for a long time. We saw it stop at a small restaurant, and we saw the driver go in the restaurant. And we positioned some cars in the back. And we saw the trunk of the car open. It was obviously there was a transfer, and a box, what might have been a large box, very easily containing the guns, went inside the restaurant. So then we knew something was up. We split our surveillance. I had most of the team stay with the restaurant owner or manager. And when the fellow that brought the guns over or brought the box over left, another agent and myself detained him. And then we waited for whatever was going to happen.
So the guns had gone inside the restaurant?
Yeah, we were sure. And the restaurant closed. It was around midnight, and the other agents saw the manager take his box and put it in his own vehicle and leave, and they followed him. And they followed him into a very, very dicey area, a very high crime area. He drove up to an apartment building. He stopped. He popped his trunk. And within moments, the vehicle was surrounded by local residents who were obviously there to pick up their guns. So, the agents took everyone down. I guess it was, I wasn't there, you know, But the agents in my group said it was one of the most exciting things they had ever done. They took down like a whole neighborhood. So it was pretty obvious what was going on. The manager of the restaurant had set himself up in the gun business. And he was one of the, as it turns out, many people who were being supplied by this corrupt dealer.
And now the dealer picked up the guns from the distributor. That was legal. Drove them across town, ended up at the restaurant. So far, still okay. Was it a criminal act for him to pass those guns to the restaurant manager?
Well, absolutely, because there were no records, you know, being maintained. But the first crime actually happened when he picked the guns up at the distributor. You see, he didn't actually pick up the guns at the distributor. We subsequently did a search warrant at the licensed premises, which was actually the man's residence, and we discovered a very interesting piece of identification. We found his driver's license, but the photo on the driver's license had been changed. It was a photo of the person who, turns out, actually picked up the guns on his behalf at the distributor.
Right. So he was using this doctored ID in order to pick up the guns in the first place.
Yeah, what this licensed dealer had actually done is he was renting out his license to all comers. I might point out that there were over 30 guns involved in this deal, and we only recovered about 10. So 20 other guns went somewhere else during that day.
Oh, as the fellow drove around.
Yeah, as he drove around. there are limits to what you can do,
only
especially
get so close.
Yeah.
And did you get convictions in that case?
We got convictions, but the process was fraught with all kinds of problems that we didn't really anticipate.
Such as?
Well, the U.S. Attorney's Office had actually asked our special agent in charge to try to focus on, you know, gun trafficking cases, to try to make, you know, the bigger cases. The U.S. Attorney's Office was tired of what they call one man, one gun cases, people, convicted felons being caught with one gun and so on. So we were pretty enthusiastic about this case because it involved a sizable number of guns. This dealer was responsible for hundreds. Many guns had been recovered, and we thought it really demonstrated not just good work, but that we were hitting at an area that had been kind of ignored before, and that was responsible for a lot of guns getting on the street. So anyways, we thought a lot of our case, and we wrote it up and took it to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and then we waited and waited and waited to get an indictment. I remember about 4 months later, we were in the office one evening, and we had been promised that we would be going to the grand jury the next day. So my agent, Charles, whose case this was all set to go to the grand jury, you know, the next day. And we were waiting for a final phone call in the office. And the call finally came in. I picked up the phone. It was about 6 o'clock. And I pick up the phone, and it's one of the assistant U.S. attorneys on the other end, a lady whom I had not met. And she said, "Well, Jay, we've taken a look at this case. We know it quite well. And really, you know, it seems like it'd be something that would be better handled administratively by ATF. Couldn't you just take the guy's gun license?"
And what were you thinking?
I was thinking, oh, my God, you know, first I have these agents who I'm responsible for. And yeah. This was our first big case. And my Lord, I don't want to demoralize the group. So what am I going to do? So I knew the chief of major crimes, a fellow by the name of Dave. He was a terrific guy. I had gotten to know him. I don't remember how. And I had his home phone number, so I called him at home. And I was trying to, while talking to him, I was trying to keep up a good front for the agents who were kind of crowding around the table trying to figure out what's going on here. And I was just about, I guess, in tears. I said, "Dave, you got to help us out on this one." And I went over the case much as I have with you. And so Dave said, okay, Jay, not a problem. Look, if I write this myself, you know, will that satisfy you?" I said, "Well, sure, you know." So he wrote the indictment himself at home that evening. And we presented it the next day.
When you look back at that time, do you think that the work that you were doing made a difference, either in discouraging corrupt dealers or in making it harder for people with criminal intent to get a gun?
If nothing else, you know, we put a halt to these little conspiracies that wound up putting so many guns on the street. Our average case after this, over the next 5 years, our average case involved diversions of 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 guns just within a period of a year. You know, it's like that Willie Sutton, you know, he robbed banks because, you know, that's where the money is. Firearms dealers, that's where the guns are. And
that's where the big profit is too, right?
Yeah, that's where the profit is and that's where the numbers are. You know, a dealer a corrupt dealer can divert thousands of firearms, you know, within a relatively brief period. So the impact of that, you know, is phenomenal. And if you can just shut, you know, corrupt dealers down, you know, you can do a whole lot of good. I mean, our biggest case involved a diversion of 10,000 guns over, I think, 2.5 years. That was a major commercial dealer.
And so if I gave you a magic pen and told you that you could write one law, put it on the books to try and slow down the trade in illegal weapons, would you do it just at the state level Jay, would you? Is there a way to do it at the national level? I mean, I'm making you supreme power now. What would you do?
Oh, great. Boy, I hope I get paid, you know, to do all this. I really have no hope that there could be any laws in this present climate. I really don't have any hope for any laws or regulations. And my last year with ATF, before I retired, ATF was really good to me. They actually assigned me to the Gun Tracing Center, and I basically traveled around the country as a consultant on gun trafficking issues. And with the help of a lot of, you know, good agents around the country, we put together what we thought would be a good firearms trafficking program. In other words, to formally create a structure within ATF that was devoted to the problem of firearms trafficking. I took that program once we put it all together, and I put together a nice little PowerPoint presentation. It was in the early days of PowerPoint. And I went and talked to the acting director at the time. They actually called me up to D.C., and I had 15 or 20 minutes with the director to present this program that other agents and myself had put together over this period of 1 year, which included everything from training to strategies and tactics and so on. And a very large component of this program would be to address the problem of corruption within the firearms industry. So I did my 15 or 20 minutes and came outside, and that was it. I think they laughed, you know.
What do you mean
they
that
laughed
was it?
About it?
You never heard about it again?
No, you know, I think essentially, you know, they laughed about it and forgot about it.
The stories from Jay Watchtell and earlier from William Vizard underline one feature of the ATF today. In recent years, many of their legal enforcement tools have been taken away by Congress, legislative moves that were promoted and encouraged by the NRA, the National Rifle Association. Jay Watchtell is now a retired ATF special agent, and he's a lecturer in criminal justice at California State University, Fullerton. He's also a novelist. His new release is called Stalin's Witnesses.